Good afternoon. I have no relationships to disclose. So to jump right into our outcome, which is a cardiovascular outcome, I'm borrowing from the epidemiology literature here rather than give a similar introduction to caregiving as the earlier presenters have done. So to look at cardiovascular risk, oh, this seems to be automated. This is looking at the evidence base for cardiovascular literature, looking from individual risk factors to sort of more established and novel risk factors to clinical endpoints, looking at, this is going to be annoying. So looking at the evidence base, building at the sort of these being the larger components of cardiovascular disease risk, and then building up into sort of specific outcomes. So with respect to caregiving, these boxes in blue are at the very least things that have been established associations made with increased risk among caregivers specifically. And then I'm gonna focus on two, inflammatory pathways and coronary disease in terms of the evidence base that really informs some of our work. So one of the prior studies in terms of looking at caregiving as a risk factor for cardiovascular disease came out of the Nurses' Health Study. And this is this first bullet, which found an increased risk of coronary heart disease among caregivers that was 82% excess risk with a significant confidence interval, which suggests that caregivers are at increased risk of specifically cardiovascular disease, which was really the first finding of that kind. Prior studies had not really been able to look specifically at a cardiovascular outcome, only more proximal issues like some of the behavioral risks or ultimately mortality. But few studies really had the ability to look at a cardiovascular outcome specifically. And then secondly, there's a group mostly from San Diego that have looked at a variety of inflammatory and stress biomarkers that are really along the pathway to cardiovascular disease, finding elevated risk of some of these inflammatory pathways among Alzheimer's caregivers compared to non-Alzheimer's caregivers. So there's some indication of also the sort of biologic mechanisms by which caregiving could be creating increased stress or strain biologically that would increase risk of cardiovascular disease. So the evidence base in terms of a prior study of an epidemiologic study, as well as some of the biologic mechanisms, are there. So what some of the gaps are is whether this holds in a nationally representative sample. This the study that I mentioned in terms of the Nurses' Health Study was looking only at women, female caregivers. So whether what the caregiving effects are for men, and also a lot of the caregiving literature has to rely on cross-sectional data or data where the caregiver is identified once they've already begun providing care. So there's a sort of inherent selection bias that a lot of the literature faces that a longitudinal study could sort of try to resolve. And also, when we were thinking about caregiving as an exposure, really looking at the literature, there are so many different definitions of what caregiving is, whether it's the duties that a caregiver provides and how many, if a caregiver is sort of defined as the number of tasks that of care that they're providing, the number of hours of care that they're providing, these different mechanisms seem to be a bit inconsistent, at least in terms of the cardiovascular disease sort of outcome. And so we tried to look at using hours of care as a measure, see if there's a dose response in terms of whether providing more care further increased your risk of cardiovascular disease. So our goals are, we use the Health and Retirement Study, which I'll explain in a second, to look at the risk of caregiving for onset of cardiovascular disease. And then we look at whether these effects vary by different health and sociodemographic factors, and then further, if there is a dose-response relationship between hours of care and increased risk of cardiovascular disease. So the Health and Retirement Study is a nationally representative longitudinal study of older adults, and with an enrolling cohort that, as of 1998, were all included. We focus on 2000 to 2008. 2000 was the first year that spousal caregiving was asked consistently. And this is racing me ahead a little bit. So we started with over 11,000 age-eligible married respondents who were interviewed in 2000, which we consider our baseline, and then excluded about a quarter of them for having a prior diagnosis of cardiovascular disease, and about 2% for missing risk factor information. And so we have 8,500 people, roughly, for contributing person time to our primary analysis. So our exposure is, we created a dichotomous outcome of whether someone provided 14 hours or more care per week. And this measure was, care recipients reported the number of ADLs, or activities of daily living, or instrumental activities of daily living with which they got care. And then it was asked who provided that care and how much care was provided. So we were able to calculate back out how much care was provided per week in terms of hours of care, and also whether that was a spouse who was providing care when we're looking only at spouses. The outcome was a self-reported doctor's diagnosis of either stroke or heart disease. And we found similar trends with each outcome, and so we combined them and are considering that to be cardiovascular disease. So it was something like, has a doctor ever told you that you've had stroke or heart disease? Is our outcome. So we did discrete time survival models and used an inverse probability weights, which allowed us to deal with an ongoing selection bias to adjust for whether someone had been a caregiver before and what factors led them to be a caregiver. And then also some of the sort of potential mediating factors. So whether the caregiving strain increased someone's, whether it decreased someone's physical activity levels as a response to the caregiving, or say, for example, another negative behavior that someone sort of began smoking again or began to smoke more for as a sort of coping mechanism. Those mediators are also sort of adjusted by a weighting mechanism that allows us to deal with some of the mediating factors that might create some bias. And then we also have a sampling weight that allows us to make claims about a nationally representative data set. So we adjust for a variety of demographics, socioeconomic factors, and health risk factors that are key for both the cardiovascular disease literature and seemingly for caregivers. So of our study population, this is a sample that's of adults 50 and older, so a particularly older population, on average about 65 years old, about 80% white, and about 20% people of color. Because these are spouses, they had to be married at the time, we're seeing about a pretty even distribution in terms of gender. On average, about a high school education and a median income of about $31,000 a year. So those are the demographic factors and the socioeconomic factors. In terms of the health characteristics, about half were reporting vigorous physical activity, about a third were currently drinking, and about 15% were current smokers. In terms of the BMI distribution, we find that there generally is an predominantly overweight or obese sample, that a fair number have comorbid conditions like hypertension and diabetes that are important, and a smaller percentage have reported depression at baseline. So to get to the meat of the matter, so to speak, we added these demographics sequentially. And so you can see in an unadjusted model, there's a similar risk that the nurse's health study found, with about an 87% increased risk for caregiving. But once we adjust for all of these factors, the effect goes down considerably and the confidence interval crosses the null, which suggests that that this effect is really potentially much more moderate than what previous research had found. And so in a sense, the short answer is really no. Looking at this with respect to different sociodemographic or health characteristics of the caregiver, we also find that there really isn't any variation in terms of gender or race or functional limitations of the caregiver or depression status, except that we do find that there's something going on with respect to race. So we find that there's a significant increased risk for cardiovascular disease among white caregivers, and a decreased risk among non-white caregivers, but a wide confidence interval, and a p-value that's just under 0.1. We find this pretty consistent with the literature, but still sort of, we're not able to sort of look too far into what some of the mechanisms are, but are looking to the literature that really sort of explains differences in caregiving trends and prevalence with respect to race to help explain some of these factors. Then to look at this dose-response relationship idea, this is a distribution of the hours of care that are provided per week, and they range from 1 to 168, which is, to do the math for you, 24 hours a day of care, which is a non-negligible amount. About 5% of people are reporting getting 24 hours a day of care. And so with respect to cardiovascular disease risk, there's actually a pretty consistent risk here at sort of moderate levels of care. But at the particularly high levels, we're finding that there's a significantly protective effect of people who are providing 24 hours a day of care for their cardiovascular disease risk. So providing reportedly getting 24 hours a day of care for the caregiver is protecting a caregiver from getting cardiovascular disease, which is we're sort of scratching our heads about what exactly to make of that. There's not a lot of differences with respect to any of the characteristics about who this group is that are getting 24 hours a day of care. They have a lower wealth and income and are slightly less educated and slightly older, but with respect to any of the health characteristics, they're similar to the other caregivers. And so it's a little curious to see this result, let alone what exactly really comprises 24 hours a day of care. Like, what exactly does that mean? So we have some limitations that are self-reported outcomes, exposures because the care recipient was reporting how much care they were receiving rather than the care provider reporting how much care they were providing. It's subject to some misclassification. And we think that there's very likely some actual main effect of caregiving for increased risk, though we had a wide confidence interval. We think that there may well be just a statistical power issue that's going on here. And certainly that holds true for the stratified analyses. But we do have a longitudinal perspective design that allows us to deal with a lot of the biases that are inherent in past and current literature for caregiving and cardiovascular disease. So we find that caregiving doesn't significantly increase risk of cardiovascular disease onset, and that the effect is actually much more modest than prior estimates. There's some evidence that this may differ by race, and there's no clear dose-response relationship between hours of care and cardiovascular disease onset. So our sort of implications and next steps are really isolating the caregiving thresholds that are clinically and statistically and conceptually significant about what is care, and research on factors that may exacerbate or remediate these subgroup effects, whether that's race or by other characteristics among the caregivers, and going beyond, as the literature suggests, really race alone to think about how these things may vary for caregivers, that race is in fact potentially just a bad proxy for culture or different types of support or connectedness within a community. And so looking a little bit further into what those characteristics are that may be protecting non-white populations with respect to cardiovascular disease risk. And so some of the next steps would be to consider some of the potential mediators if we're not seeing a sort of full effect with disease onset, but rather maybe hypertension, diabetes, some of the more comorbid conditions or health behaviors like smoking, to examine these differences by race and to consider whether these other characteristics may be in fact what's going on rather than sort of race and race alone. And so we have colleagues to acknowledge and of course some funders. Thank you. Yes.
So you don't have any data on care. Because you know, sometimes people just say,
right.
Oh, he helps me all the time.
Right.
He just totally takes care of me, or he does, or
right.
Whatever.
We kind of think that what might be happening here is that we have really appreciative spouses more than anything, right? Is that there's this idea that they're so helpful, it must be all day kind of care. And so they're reporting 24 hours a day of care. And that's in fact indicative of some potential, component of their relationship, or that there might be something that's really kind of unmeasured going on because the care recipient is reporting the amount of care that's happening here.
Not understanding the definitional black line or boundary between caregiving and social support is that what they might be getting 24/7 is really kind of more of a social support, more of an emotional
right.
support, as opposed to that physical hands-on task.
Right. The way that the questions were asked is it was right after the sort of battery about activities of daily living and instrumental activities of daily living. So one might think that the amount of care that they were receiving was considered to be with respect to, bathing and whatnot. But it's likely that if those two are going really hand in hand, the instrumental support of helping transfer to and from bed and the social support, that those might really be acting in concert, and people are reporting that way with respect to how much care they're receiving. Well, we don't have measures of what the activities we didn't look at the number of reported issues with which they're receiving help and the number of hours. That's a great idea.
So in the HRS, the hours is asked, it's how many days in the past month did you get help? Did you get help every week? You got help every week, how many days? And then on an average day, how many hours did you get?
Right.
So these, they're not actually asking the care recipients to sum up the number of hours per week.
That's right. We calculated that.
So you calculate it from the question of on an average day.
Right.
And on an average week.
Right.
How many? Then my other question was, did you include caregivers who were caregivers selected through the money question?
No. We found that was a significant predictor of childhood socioeconomic status, so basically stunting. That has been significant for stroke in other research that we've done, so we included that and mother's education as measures of childhood socioeconomic status.
I object.
Yeah.
Right.
Just,
actually providing round-the-clock care,
right.
And they may just be actually getting a lot of exercise and only eating, you know. I mean, it's possible that 24-hour care is an actual, goes to actual report that if you love somebody and they need you and you're taking care of them, and it's like anybody who's had little kids knows what that is.
Right.
And, or maybe a caregiving person in a situation. So it's possible that what you're getting there is actually the protective effect of really somebody completely engaged.
Right. Well, and we find a sort of similar effect of like over 100 hours. I think that there's something probably about saying 24 hours a day that sums to once, like we're looking at the week, so 168 hours per week, that might be a little bit different than somebody who says 20 hours, right? Because it's just a rounder number and it means all the time. But yeah, we're seeing similar things for people who are reporting getting a lot of care. And so I think that there may well be something to, you know, that there are people who are just legitimately providing that much care.
Yeah. Every day. So that's just one of those things that people say that, and especially when you're comparing two groups where the numbers might just be due to the fact, like you said, well, she helps me all the time, so that's
right.
Hour, yeah.
Right.
The other thing is you might be able to get at some of that social support and kind of community involvement with the HRS, because they have a series of questions mm-hmm. about
Right. Yeah, we're looking in research that we're looking at now at the predictors of care and the whether caregiving has sort of more mental health effects. And so we're looking at more broadly the social support questions that are included in HRS. No, we didn't look at that. The hours of care, the idea about this dose response was that at least in terms of the nurses' study, they measured it at 9 hours of care or more a week, and other studies within HRS had used 14, and so we wanted to sort of tease out whether there was something about the hours of care and try to see if there's a kind of a conceptual important definition of the hours of care. But I think that it may be more illustrative to look at the number of reported activities that need assistance. That's a great suggestion.
Did you have the data, the biological data, the biomarkers, like D-dimer and things like that for those groups?
No, unfortunately. There's a subsample of that received biomarker tests in 2006. But it was cholesterol, HbA1c, and blood pressure. Yeah. No, unfortunately. The sample's just so large, it's sort of logistically and financially difficult, I would imagine.